Welcome to a special edition of Flix 66. We can call it our social distancing podcast because the COVID-19 threat, Governor Newsom put basically California on lockdown last night. And so all of us are joining via Skype today. With me as always, I'm Dr. Thomas Parham, Executive Director of Screenwriting at Azusa Pacific University. With me as always are...
Ryan Ize, adjunct professor within the same department.
And Aaron Linneman, professional mover.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Basically, just for those, well, I think everybody's pretty much aware, but pretty much all the Southern California universities and colleges started shifting to online formats last week. And decisions have been moving fast and furiously, but our students have to move out of their dorms by this Sunday, the 22nd, and the rest of student housing by, I think, the 25th. So, and all spring classes will be completed online via whatever means necessary. Canvas is our standard online portal. I've been using a combination of Canvas and Skype. So... And I've got the last box office report for the foreseeable future because AMC Theaters and Regal Cinemas have both shut down till the COVID thing is over. Onward held on to the top spot, but it dropped 72%, and mostly because a lot of areas were already starting last weekend to be told to stay inside. So that had $10.6 million. What was that?
Disney Plus is going to put it. I was going to say Disney Plus is going to put it up, I think, April 3rd. So now there's just, you know, as you're saying, a wave of films that are finding other ways to get their audiences streaming or whatnot. So Disney Plus has decided that Onward will be going up in, you know, very short time. So that's probably exciting for me since I missed it.
And they just put
Star Wars is.
Go ahead.
Star Wars is that one. Not as big of a rush. Onward just came out, so that's a pretty big deal to have that immediately available. Not just pay, like you can, you know, like Bloodshot or whatnot, you can pay $20 to watch, but who wants to do that? But Onward being able to see that if you have the streaming service, which I guess half of the family homes in the United States have Disney Plus. So
oh, it's a crazy number.
Have access to it.
And they put Frozen 2 on earlier this week, 3 months ahead of schedule, and I'm sure that's a huge hit with the youngins. I, of course, will not be playing it anytime soon because I did not like it at all. Bloodshot debuted at number 2 with $9.1 million. That's from Sony, starring Vin Diesel, based on a comic book. I Still Believe, a faith-based film, had a very respectable debut. Also at 9.1, just a little under Bloodshot. So that would have been really promising to see how it would have continued to do. That's from Lionsgate. It's from the makers of I Can Only Imagine. The Invisible Man dropped 61% in its next... I guess it's been out for 3 weekends now. And Universal is planning to put that and The Hunt, which also finally opened up last week, and Emma... Universal plans to make those available on demand in the next few weeks. And my dog is going crazy because somebody has probably got the nerve to walk by the condo. The Hunt, by the way, after being pulled from release last fall because of political kerfuffle and accusations and charges going back and forth, you know, here's one reason I'm against censorship. Film is a meritocracy. Box office is a meritocracy, or Darwinism, survival of the fittest. If people want to see it, they'll see it. If they don't, they won't. And The Hunt did not get good reviews. It was not fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and it only made $5 million, and it was in 3,028 theaters. So all these people who got their bonnets and a twist about the movie, it's like, just let it flop on its own. You give it more attention by making the big stink.
I take major issue with that anyway, because one, I don't follow Rotten Tomatoes, and the score on Metacritic was not terrible, and it's not a terrible movie. I went and saw it.
Oh, you saw it?
what you think. Yeah, it's diverting. It's whatever. But the
it's the most dangerous game.
No, yeah, exactly. But the biggest problem with it is that the politics. It was because the president tweeted that the movie was we're gonna support a movie that's about people hunting Republicans. First of all, Republican and Democrat never said in the entire film. Neither is Trump. They keep those words out. Second of all, the film is clearly far more critical of the left-wing liberals than it is the conservatives. So it's a satire. To be criticizing the film because the villains are these extremist liberals would be the same as criticizing Invisible Man because you say that you're supporting a movie that's about an abusive husband. That's the villain. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. The logic doesn't track. Well, you don't say, I don't want to watch this film because it's supporting something when it's the bad guy that's doing it.
My biggest problem
doesn't make any logical sense.
My biggest problem is people shouldn't be criticizing movies they haven't seen. I mean, first rule of film criticism, watch the movie. If you haven't seen the movie, sit down and shut up. I mean,
but that's a common thing. I mean, Constance Wu came out on Twitter about The Great Wall saying that it was whitewashing and it was a Chinese filmmaker and the script had always called for a white character that just happened to be cast as Matt Damon. But that was not a case of whitewashing. But she didn't see the movie to find out or even find out that the lead character was a female Asian character. It happens all the time. People get all riled up on the internet over something. And the fact that our president's doing it should not be of any surprise.
I mean,
they do call him, they refer to in the movie as our rat blank blank in chief. So you know they're talking about him. But every other thing in the movie, for the most part, is balanced. And if not, it's more critical of liberals than it is conservatives.
Yeah, I'm just.
But yeah, you're right. They should have.
Yeah, I'm just over people. There's a Faith in Film secret Facebook group I'm part of, and so one of the members was saying, "Can we all denounce this movie now?" It's like, "Oh, come on!" And I'm pretty sure she hadn't seen it yet. It's like you can't criticize something you haven't seen. I mean,
it's tame.
It's the most dangerous game. I mean, it's almost as, you know, it sounds like kind of a variation of the thing with Get Out.
Yeah, but there's a lot of jokes where, like, the liberal characters that are doing the hunting, they're trying to, like, teach the conservatives why guns, safety and measures and all that. But their political correctness is so over the board, like, that they every time you say something like you people or they people, they criticize themselves. Like, they're so worried about being so politically correct that it becomes a source of satire and humor in the movie. So it's the violence itself is tame. It's the satire people were worried about, but they need to realize it's satire. Satire has that purpose. It's not meant to be taken seriously. It's meant to poke fun at.
And satire, by definition, has a corrective aim, unlike farce, which is fun for fun's sake. We're gonna instead of rattling down news about TV shows and pickups and movie thing. I mean, here's the thing. Basically, everything in the entertainment industry is shut down worldwide. I mean, the first ripples were last week when individual production started shutting down. A good friend of mine is an assistant editor on Legacies, which is the Vampire Diaries spinoff on the CW. But basically, everything everywhere worldwide is shutting down. We're talking about Baz Luhrmann officially confirmed that the Presley biopic has been shut down. It's like, dude, one of your stars and his wife had COVID-19, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. But everything, it's just a hot mess. And there's a lot of people going to be out of work for months. My friend on the Legacies, basically, the decision was made to make episode 16 the season finale, and they restart hopefully in July. It's like, so that's a lot of months that people, you know, a lot of people are going to be out of work. It's just crazy. I mean, movie theaters are shut down. DreamWorks is going to try something really interesting. They're going to release Trolls World Tour, which was supposed to come out next month. they're going to release it on demand instead of, they can't release it in theaters because there's no theaters that are open. And yeah, it's just, and release dates have been pushed, starting with, there was a kids movie and I'm forgetting what it was, but Disney was one of the first, Mulan got pushed. And then, of course, Black Widow got pushed. But a lot of stuff. Oh, the Bond movie. The Bond movie, No Time to Die, was supposed to open next month. Not opening till hopefully November. But it's just insane.
I noticed.
Say what?
Yeah, A Quiet Place. And Fast, oh, yeah. Fast Nine.
A Quiet Place. And what was the other one?
Fast Nine got pushed back
right.
For a year.
Yeah, it's just insane. But this is going to have ripple effects because not only are people going to be out of work for X number of months, but things that were supposed to start may not start on time. Some things may get canceled out. It's just a hot mess. I mean,
the Cannes Film Festival was just
canceled. Yeah, what's interesting is they moved Cannes Lions first, and then they moved Cannes proper. But yeah, everything. It's just wow. I don't know what to say. It's just about the only piece of news that I've seen that kind of made me feel good is this morning it was confirmed or it was announced that Rosario Dawson has been cast to play Oksana Tano on Mandalorian season 2, which is like, yay, geek news I can That's cheer cool. for. But, oy. And a lot of the TV shows, Supernatural was supposed to have its. This was the final season of Supernatural. They still have 2 more episodes to shoot. Or operative word, they had 2 more episodes to shoot before they shut down. And Jared Padalecki is the lead of the new Walker reboot. So who knows if they'll go back and make those now. But, I mean, that's almost worse than a show that you don't know if it's going to get picked up or not, and then it gets canceled without a proper series finale. Here's a show that's been on for 15 years that they had 2 episodes left to shoot, and we don't know if we'll ever see them.
I can't believe that show's still on.
Don't get me started. They had a 5-year plan, and in the 5th season finale, there were 2 major characters' deaths, and then they magically undid them in the last few moments of the show and kept going for 10 more years. So, yeah, I stopped watching after season 9. It's like, seriously. Although I did watch the Scooby-Doo crossover, which was a lot of fun, and I watched episode number 300, and they got they got Jeffrey Dean Morgan back, but wasted him completely, which was a shame. He played the boy's dad, but now he was big because he was on. He's big because he's the he's Negan on Walking Dead.
Yeah. Which is also a show that should be done.
Oh, jeez.
I still watch it. I don't care what any of you guys say. I enjoy it.
I find it fascinating that World Beyond, the next spinoff, is only a 2-season limited series, which is...
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, and that's how they're marketing it, too, which is, okay, whatever, baby.
Because Fear the Walking Dead is still dragging on.
My gosh. They had a 5-episode season 1. I quit during episode 3. It's like, no, life's too short. To their credit, they knew the show wasn't working, and they've, you know, reinvented it a couple of times and brought in a fan favorite and mixed up the cast. I'm sorry, Walking Dead Mothership should not still be on. I mean, this is the shelf life for the average drama is 5 to 7 years, and what, they're going into season 10 or 11? It's crazy.
Yeah,
I still enjoy it though. It's definitely dropped, but there's still an appeal when I watch that. Whereas, you know, some of the new stuff, I struggle to get past the first couple seasons. I'm still invested in Walking Dead. It isn't as good, but I guess it's that soap opera. I mean, I still watch Grey's Anatomy, so I guess it says something.
Seriously?
About my characters. Yeah, I do. I mean, it's enjoyable. It's like a comfortable old blanket.
I was going to say it's comfort food.
Else. Yeah. You know, like your blanket from your childhood that's tattered and torn, and anyone else would be like, ew, I don't want that. That's dirty and old.
You leave Mr. Binky alone.
Yeah, that's what those shows are for me now. So,
although there was a little, I stopped watching after season 3 when Isaiah Washington got fired, and for me, that first 3 years was so, you know, for lack of a better term, magical. But afterwards, it was watchable, but just not the same.
So. Yeah, for me, there's dips, and, you know, there will be good times and bad times. Even with the original cast, there was, like, a sex scene with a ghost that Katherine Heigl had in one scene.
Speaking of the aforementioned Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Yeah, I was going to say, wasn't that him?
That was he. Weird, wild stuff. What did you think, since we're on Grey's Anatomy, and I don't watch the show, but I've been following the behind-the-scenes drama because Justin Chambers basically didn't come back from Christmas break and then sent very nice, very kind, you know, tweets and social media posts saying, yeah, after 15 years, I'm done. Love y'all. Bye. So they had to write him out of the show. And he did come back to do a voiceover.
I haven't watched the current season. I should say watch it on Netflix. Okay. I binge it leading into our next conversation or our feature conversation. But I have been following the drama as well. It seems weird because he doesn't have a thriving career outside of the show. So you think you would treat the person that had employed him for the last decade and a half a little more graciously. It was an odd decision on his part.
Dude, the thing is, yeah. Network television dramas especially are a grind. I mean, and Sherry Stringfield quit ER suddenly season 3. And it was so top secret hush-hush that the episode where the character leaves was Thursday night. And I just figured watching it, oh, she'll be back. Next day in the trades, oh, no, she's really gone. And people are like, what? And they're like, girl, you crazy. It's like... But man, especially when the show only had six main characters, you know, it's a grind. And just after a while, you know, whether it's a couple of years or 15 years, I can see, dude, I gotta do something. You know, you have enough money in the bank. You know, you want to see your kids grow up.
Yeah, I get that. But he's also not really been that featured. And, you know, there's so many different storylines and so many other characters that they brought in now that even if he's like 15 minutes per episode, yes, it's a grind. But I don't see how it's so much of a grind that if you've been doing it for 15 years, you can't give a little more notice.
Strange. But
It put money in his bank. It's going to feed and educate his children for the, you know, future. So I just think he could have maybe given them a little more of a heads up than he did. Just my personal professional opinion.
But from reading the social media posts that he made, as well as the showrunner and the star, I'm blanking on her name. Jeez. Ellen Pompeo. You know, yeah. I mean, oh, aside from the timing issue, it was on good terms because everybody was – it was a love fest. It was just that, I can't do this anymore. So who knows what was happening. There might have been – reading between the lines, there might have been something else going on in his personal life. You never know. So what was the last movie you saw in a theater before the shutdown, Aaron?
Onward.
Okay, so you saw Onward. I liked Onward. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I thought it was solid. The ending was definitely a tearjerker.
Definitely. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought that it was a solid Pixar film. The thing about Pixar films is like it's almost a curse how good its first like handful of films were, because it's just held to such a higher standard.
Oh yeah. I would I remember, I forget what Pixar movie it was, but a friend of mine was criticizing it, saying it wasn't Pixar good, but it was DreamWorks good. It's like rare. No offense to my friends who work at DreamWorks, and I love DreamWorks, especially the Trolls. The last couple of things I saw were, I saw Onward, I saw, now I need to pull up my AMC A-list account, which by the way, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. Finish your thought. AMC.
I'll have to pull up my AMC A-list account to see what movie. I saw four movies in the last month. And I saw Ben Affleck's The Way Back. I thought it was solid.
I wanted to see that. I didn't get a chance to.
I thought the movie was okay. I thought his performance was quite good. I thought the script could have been better, but, you know, that's most movies these days. I saw Sonic the Hedgehog, and it's like there's one more thing I saw in the last month or so. Oh, Birds of Prey, which is being released on demand, like, really soon, like, maybe even this week. Is that it?
Anyone else see Invisible Man?
I didn't, because you talked me out of it.
I was super disappointed in that. I wanted so badly for it to be intelligent. I wanted – can I give you my pitch for what this movie should have been?
Yes.
It'll never get made at this point. My thing is that horror movies work best when the villains are nuanced and when they work like The Hunt, both reactionary and progressive, when they can be read in two different ways, where you can get different views on some socio-political event going on. And this is clearly – a Time's Up Me Too movie where we have our lead protagonist is the victim of an abusive marriage and escapes it and then finds out that what she thinks to be deceased husband is now invisible with his technology. Here's my problem is that the invisible man, the character, the husband, you don't see him at all really, which is fine, but he doesn't even have scenes of dialogue where we have any nuance or depth or roundness to his character. He's just a villain. He's just an abusive husband. He has one scene of dialogue at the end of the movie and a few whispered lines the rest of it. Had the movie not been scared to give some even, dare I say, sympathy to a villain character, I think there could have been a far better film. If we had had a movie that was willing to embrace in much the same way that Watchmen TV series did it with its villain. I'm not going to spoil too much about that show. Mm-hmm. But if they had made the Invisible Man a man that was worried that he was turning invisible in the female-forward society, maybe even had him not be the wealthy one in the marriage, but the abusive one that was making less money and as a way of combating him feeling his masculinity was taken away in this new society that's female forward, is abusive in that sense, and then literally becomes an invisible man in society. And it's still a horror character, is still the one that we want to be taken down. But if they'd given some depth, that there'd been some understanding as to where he's coming from. But it's almost like they were scared to do any to show any sympathy for anyone other than the female victim, which it just makes for a very boring movie, not to mention extremely shoddy CGI and a lack of logic in a lot of scenes. Like, paint, if thrown on a character, does not wash off in a sink in 5 seconds. Having a character with a gun sitting right in front of them that sits and watches five security guards get taken out before they reach for the gun, just dumb. There's a lot of scenes like that. And then there's the fact that the trailer shows you a clip from every single scene except for the finale, which is like 5 to 10 minutes long. So you know everything that's coming as you're watching the movie because of the marketing. They spoiled it all. Wow. See, I had multiple reasons where I was frustrated by what could have been a very smart and timely horror movie, updating it if they just tweaked it a little bit and had a little more
nuance,
a little more guts to it, you know?
Yeah.
Nuance. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the problem is absolute good versus absolute evil isn't drama. That's melodrama.
Oh, it's boring. It's so boring.
How is Elizabeth Moss? Because she runs hot and cold for me. Sometimes I like her and sometimes I want to. Sometimes I really do not.
You know, I it's hard for me because I really can't stand The Handmaid's Tale. A lot of it is because I've watched the 90s version. And I know how much they're just stretching this material out. The other part of it is there's this tendency to end almost every single episode with Elizabeth Moss giving that crying, terrified look very close to the camera. She has that expression on a lot of the movies. So she's not bad, but it's just I'm tired of seeing her play those same – kind of like Kerry Washington, where she has the puppy dog eyes and the I smell something gross look. Those are like her two main expressions that she had for all of Scandal. That's how I feel about Elizabeth Moss. Very good actresses, but they just need to vary their facial expressions a bit. I find it a little bit irksome. Maybe that's just my pet peeve, but
yeah,
she's solid.
Yeah, I have. Speaking of Scandal, I have a love-hate relationship with that show. I hated the pilot, and was convinced by a friend to watch pretty much a lot of the series. But there's a moment in the final season where they jump the shark, and I'm like, I'm done. Although I went back for the finale, and it's like, ugh, whatever.
I hated the ending because they had already established in earlier seasons that her main character. Sorry, I'm going to spoil something for anyone listening. They established that she's an all-out, just straight-out murder. She kills someone in cold blood, and then they give her a happy ending anyway. They just give her a going off into the sunset, and you get your happy little – that did not sit right for me, that they set her up as just this person that's willing to, in cold blood, murder someone, and then they justify that. Like, no, I'm sorry. Other characters are held accountable for their actions.
Yep.
And punished for them. So that for me was jumping the shark before even the last season.
What else have you seen that you liked before theaters closed, Ryan?
For me, honestly, it was just The Hunt and Invisible Man, because I feel an obligation to stay up on the horror movies.
Since you are
dedicated so much time to knowing what's going on, and having for a long time advocated. Or argued that the horror movie is the best genre for social and political messages, and The Hunt and Invisible Man are clearly an example of that.
Sounds like there's a good article to be written about that, Ryan. Hint, hint, hint. since we have a lot of time in our hand the next couple of months. So let's talk about people should be social distancing, depending on what state you're listening to this from. You know, in California, only necessary trips. So for food, medical things, grocery stores, drug stores, etc., gas stations. But people are going to have a lot of their times to binge movies or TV shows on demand or via one of the plethora of streaming services. Speaking of which, I wonder if HBO Max and Peacock are still going to launch next month. If I were Warner Media and Comcast, I would launch them early to give people more options, because it's not like they're going to be spending money outside at theaters. Might as well spend it on your streaming service. So what are your favorite binges, Aaron?
I just caught up on This Is Us. I watched like a full season's worth this last couple weeks. And then,
are you caught up to the current
I just watched the last episode live now that I'm caught up.
I am not digging this story arc at all. As in, it is most likely going to be my last season watching the show. I just hate what they're doing with these character relationships, specifically the brothers and the mom. I'm like, no. It's so contrived.
I don't mind it, but I have seen that a lot of other people have on like Reddit and stuff really disliked what they're doing with some of the characters and are saying the same thing. But I'm pretty excited for the season finale this upcoming week.
Well, I wouldn't call it excited, but you know, depending on how it goes, I am more than likely not going to be deleting the season pass from my DVR. That's how unhappy I am. I mean, I've dealt with two aging, you know, my family's had two aging parents in the past 15 years dealing with some of the same issues, and they are hitting all the wrong notes.
Really?
In terms of reality.
Okay. I don't have any close experience to that, so I wouldn't know. So that's very interesting. I think there's a lot of people upset about that actually. So but also something that I thought is kind of cool what they're doing right now on like Twitter and everything is I think it started with The Office, since there's not a real March Madness. Some like older TV shows are doing their own like March Madness.
Oh, like the brackets of TV shows?
Yeah.
Like so classic sitcoms, go!
Yeah, The Office is doing one, and the cool thing is they have the voting option on Twitter, so you can vote.
Oh, wow.
And I was considering, it's in its final four stage right now, I was considering watching the final four episodes that they have on the bracket.
Or are they doing, they're doing it for off episodes of The Office?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I'd be into that. I bet you none of them come from the last couple of years of the show either.
yeah, that's very true. I think most of them come from season two and three, or season two to five, which I think the show definitely started to slow down a little bit. You could see starting at season five.
Although I will say that Michael's exit was what the proposal, Michael's proposal to Holly was very sweet and well done. And his final episode was great. And then after that, I just, why bother?
Yeah, no, I there's some moments in season nine I really like, but season eight is definitely just like completely worthless in my opinion. I think it is for most people. I'm trying to catch up on the Clone Wars if I have a chance. I'm done with season one. I really like it. Like, I'm really starting to like it. It's getting a lot better. I just think that season one is kind of rough.
That's what I've heard.
Getting through. But now, definitely, since Ahsoka is, like, going to be on The Mandalorian, like, I'm definitely going to finish the series.
Anything else?
I'm just also... Maybe I can finish my Netflix queue. Possible. I have like 50 movies, but you know,
only 50. Oh man,
Breaking Mine is always down full. One movie at a time. I've been also just like rewatching some movies. I just rewatched Her and rewatched Moonlight last night, and just kind of like, you know, I can't deny Netflix has really good selections. Really good movies. So, yeah.
How about the plan you were sharing with me the other day at school?
Oh yeah, that's probably gonna be at once I'm finished moving and everything. I think I'm gonna start doing the AFI Top 100 list. That's something I really want to do. I want to watch all the movies on that list. I think I'm probably going to have to do a trial of the Criterion channel for some of those films. I've been very interested in the Criterion streaming service.
Once it's up and working again, the library service is great for that stuff. If you use Link Plus, you can get all of those for free.
Really?
So yeah, they'll send them right to the APU library. You can even choose what campus you want it to be sent to. I have a stack right now of stuff from Link Plus of like, you know, Italian, Asian gangster movies that I'm trying to watch in anticipation of my world cinema lecture this coming week. So yeah, oh, obscure wow. stuff. It's great. But all of the AFI stuff is sure to be on there.
That's good. Save yourself good. Some money. Yeah.
If school was still in session in person, I could loan you. I've got them in my office, but we're not, so that can't happen. Ryan, how about you? What are some of your favorite binges?
Oh, man, mine are going to be super untraditional.
That's
and
cool.
And they go very highbrow and very lowbrow. So we'll start with the lowbrow. I've definitely, when I'm binging things, it tends to be more like reality TV. And my favorite, I'd say the very top of my list is Impractical Jokers, which is the hidden camera sort of prank competition show with four friends. They challenge each other to do things. It's a whole variety of stuff. Sometimes they'll have like, conferences set up, or like, what do you call them? Like marketing with people, consumer opinion surveys. and whoever gets the most to vote for whatever ridiculous idea that the other people on the team has put in front of them, then they win. Or other things they do is they'll go into like a grocery store and how many clothespins can you put on someone without them noticing, or how many items can you put into someone else's cart? Just ridiculous things like that. It's kind of, when I talked about that they have a movie that was out in theaters before the theater shut down, I was talking to you about it, Tom, and you asked if it was like Jackass. It's kind of like Jackass, but with a lot less teeth. It's more family friendly, but it makes me laugh. It always gets me. It's on True TV, but you can either on the app, you can watch it, or I know on Netflix they had a season up for a while, the first season of it. So that one is a go-to for me whenever I want to laugh. I can watch old episodes. It doesn't matter. I'm sold on that show. But the other reality TV, I guess, anything, any cooking competition shows, you know, World's Worst Cooks or MasterChef or Top Chef. And I love Survivor and Amazing Race. I'll even rewatch some of the older seasons of those just for fun. So that's my lower brow. If I'm going to binge stuff, I'll probably watch reality TV. Oh, and I'm watching Ink Master right now too. Any competition show having to do with any art form usually gets my interest. Although I can't do the voice anymore. That's just gotten ridiculously staged in my opinion. And then my highbrow, like I said, goes the opposite way. I've been trying to work my way through a film series, the Zatoichi film series, a series of Japanese samurai films about a blind swordsman. He's actually technically not a samurai, but he's a blind yakuza, which they were like the foot soldiers. So they did not have the same class status as samurai, couldn't carry two swords. And he has a cane that turns into a sword, like a sword comes out of it. But yeah, they made 26 of those films, all the same actor from like the 60s to the 80s. And I think I've watched 7 or 8 of them. I have the whole series. It was put out on Criterion. But they're really enjoyable. They're funny and occasionally violent, but not to the degree of some of the later samurai films. So yeah, that's been me watching either art house action movies or bad reality TV is basically what I've been doing.
Well, I just my most recent binge, believe it or not, I shared this with our tech staff a couple of days ago. I'd seen it on Disney Plus and I didn't know what to think, but on a lark, because what else are you gonna do? I binged High School Musical, the series.
No.
Season 1.
I'm so ashamed. How can you talk trash about The Walking Dead? We should watch that.
No, the thing that was the thing I find fascinating, and it's so meta, it's not. First off, I had no idea what it really was. I just figured, oh, it's just going to be like a behind the scenes docu-series about high school putting on High School Musical. No, that's not what it is. It's basically it uses the High School Musical framework, and it is ostensibly a fictional show about high school students at East High School, Salt Lake East High School, which is where they filmed High School Musical, the Disney Channel original movie, DCOM. But it's 10 years later, and so the new drama teacher's like, how have you been here for 10 years and not staged a production of High School Musical? But what's fascinating to me is all the characters are the classic Archie archetypes. So your lead guy is Archie, and then the two female leads are Betty and Veronica. His frenemy is Reggie. His bestie is Jughead, and so forth. And I just thought that was interesting that this is more Archie than Riverdale is. But it's enjoyable. They actually have, for a show that's got High School Musical, the series, and musical twice in the title, there's not as much music as you would think, and which is not necessarily a bad thing, but the kids are all crazy talented, and the woman who plays the teacher is quite good. She's kind of like a younger Kristen Chenoweth type, but and a little edgier, so it's got a lot of Glee type factors in it and the things that the kids are dealing with. but it was enjoyable. And they've added the dude from Derek Huff from Dancing with the Stars is going to be on season two, and they've announced some other cast members for season two. So previously, I had binged Hunters on Amazon, which Al Pacino's first television series, and it's basically about a loosely based on real life events about a group of Nazi hunters in the late 70s, based out of New York. Lots of interesting twists and turns. Tone is a little uneven. They introduce a magical realism element after the pilot, which, generally speaking, you want to introduce all your major themes and motifs in the pilot so people know what to expect, because when you don't, people are like, what's this about? But the finale had some really wild twists and turns. My friend Allison did not appreciate one of them, but it's worth checking out. It is not for the faint at heart. It is a pretty solid TVMA. And also go ahead.
Aren't they, well, I was just saying, you say it's TVMA, but aren't they getting into all this stuff right now with like Love, Simon, we don't want to have gay character themes on our Disney Plus, no, and the Lizzie McGuire. No, isn't it like,
Hunter,
stay away from anything too adult?
Hunters Hunters is Amazon. Yeah, I was surprised.
I was still thinking about High School Musical.
You were thinking about Disney Plus. Yeah, the cancellation of the Lizzie McGuire series. I know that. Why can't I think of her name? Hilary Duff was trying.
Canceled. They just fired the showrunners. They might move it to Hulu.
The show is dead, and Hilary Duff is trying to convince Disney corporate to move it to Hulu. But they killed the show. They fired the showrunner, but then they killed the show. So she has to she'll have to resurrect it. And this market is so strange. Who knows what's going to happen? But I was surprised High School Musical, the musical series, actually has a couple of gay characters. They have a guy playing Sharpay as a guy. But I thought that that was an interesting choice. So it was a little bit more progressive than your typical Disney Channel type of thing would be. I do know that the Love, Simon follow-up, it's got a title. It's Love of somebody else's name. But that is definitely moving to Hulu from Disney Plus, because they got a little nervous about the content thing. And that's...
Well, I should say my understanding is that like Disney Plus is trying to stay away from being anything other than family and children oriented. So
yeah, that's why I was surprised that High School Musical was so progressive, because you have these, two gay guys go to the homecoming dance as dates. Love, Victor is the follow up to Love, Simon. And it's set to premiere. Actually, it's set to premiere this June on Hulu, with Nick Robinson, who played Simon, narrating. Onward took some flack because one of the female characters mentions in passing about her wife, girlfriend. And some people, especially in other countries, were not happy with that and were censoring the movie.
It makes sense with the voice actor that played it, though, because she's become famous for writing characters that talk about, you know, issues of being LGBT issues. So, I give him credit for that.
Yeah, I was, speaking of TV, of hard TVMA, one of my dramatic writing, TV drama writing students is specking the show, writing a spec script for the show Sex Education on Netflix. And it is a hard TVMA for language and sexual content. But I was surprised when you get past those trappings, it is a very positive, humane show in terms of the showrunner and the writers love all the characters, even the one who starts initially as an antagonist. So, and
I love his development.
Adam?
That whole arc. Oh, yeah.
Adam Groff.
Is just fantastic. And it's a very sweet and romantic film. It's far more preoccupied with romance than it is lust, even if it is about the struggles being a teenager, you know, the minefield of puberty and sex and all of that experimentation and all of that is in there. It's clearly more focused on the romantic relationships Definitely. Than the sexual ones. And once you get past the first couple episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I've been telling my students who are writing pilots for their capstone projects is you've got to front load series. You've got to front load your pilot. You've got to put everything and the kitchen sink in there to hook people. And then you can back off. But, and that pilot is pretty outrageous. I'm like, oh my. But when
there's a lot less sex in the second season.
Oh, definitely.
Back.
Definitely. I just want to give a shout out to Gillian Anderson executes a flawless British accent to the point that somebody asked me, is she British? It's like, no, she was born in Chicago. And of course, most people remember her as Dana Scully from The X-Files. And for the nerds, all my nerdy bros and nerd girls out there, you can binge Battlestar Galactica, the 2003 reboot, via the Sci-Fi app. It's all there. And then once Peacock launches, it'll be on Peacock. And then if you sign up for a free trial for CBS All Access next week, you can binge both seasons of Discovery and the first season of Star Trek Picard. And then Disney Plus has the first 8 chapters of the Star Wars saga, as well as Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels and Star Wars Resistance. So there's a lot of stuff for geeky bros and geeky gals out there. Finally,
also the Hulu has a deal with FX, so you can watch that show Devs. And you can watch all of Legion, which I know the two of you would totally appreciate. But yeah, no, there's a lot of good FX stuff that's just available, like as the shows air a couple days.
Yeah, and
later, so it's great.
On my list to binge
from your recommendation is The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
That
too.
I was
adding to the geeky list.
I was going to mention that. Thank you for the plug. All 4 seasons of The Expanse, and they're following the book series very closely. Speaking of FX on Hulu, I discovered horrifically that if you do not DVR something on FX you want to see, the only way to see it is to get it on Hulu or to buy a season pass, because it was not available through the FX app. It's like, thank you, Disney, for promoting your cross-platform service. But I'm digging Devs. I'm digging Devs so far. We've only seen, 3 episodes? But it's from Alex.
Yeah, I think so.
It's from Alex Garland, who wrote and directed Ex Machina, and he's. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting.
And Annihilation.
Sorry, I liked Annihilation. Yeah, I wasn't as thrilled with Annihilation as I was with Ex Machina, but the religious iconography that shows up in episodes 2 and 3 of Devs, I thought was fascinating, and I look forward to figuring out what the show is really about. So, but there's a lot of good stuff to stream, and of course you can download movies, watch movies on Amazon Prime or Netflix or Disney Plus or Hulu or what other services are out there, as well as I think the iTunes store is getting ready to have some sales. I managed to pick up Parks and Rec, the entire series, for $30 a couple weekends ago. So I was very pleased with myself.
Oh, wow.
Treat yourself.
I give a quick shout out to a movie that I think is Disney's black sheep, one of them, that I discovered on Disney Plus that I completely forgot. And they try not to remind you, because I don't think it was even mentioned during their big tweet thread on launch. And that movie is Teacher's Pet. You should check it out.
Teacher's Pet.
It's an interesting movie.
Okay.
It was based off of like a 2-season show on Disney Channel created by Gary Baseman, who does the illustrations for the game Cranium.
Uh-huh.
And it is it's very, very interesting. It is not very Disney-esque, but I did laugh a couple times. It is very. It came out in 2002. Check it out. I think it is one of Disney's black sheep, because they never tried to put it out on Blu-ray or anything after the initial DVD. It wasn't very
popular either, though, when that came out. I worked at a theater when it came out. I just remember the hard push for it and it not being like, if I'm thinking correctly of the movie.
It's a wild movie for a Disney movie, I think. For a Disney kids movie. So I just want to give it the recognition if you want to watch something interesting on Disney Plus.
Oh wait, no, I'm not even familiar with this one. About a talking dog?
Yeah. It's very interesting. And I thought it was worth mentioning if whoever is listening wants an interesting watch. It is a very short movie too. It is only like an hour and 10 minutes. Not
oh, wow.
And it stars a lot of people. It stars, who does the voice of Timon?
Nathan Lane.
Nathan Lane.
Jerry Stiller.
Oh, I love, I miss Jerry Stiller.
Show. Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, cool.
It's an interesting watch.
Cool. Okay. Thanks for the recommendation. Okay. Well, we may actually come back a few times during this, during our sequestration to talk about some of the things we've been binging and to check on the progress of Aaron working through the AFI 100 list. That could be kind of fun. So
that would be fun.
Until next time, please maintain a safe distance. Only go out if you need to. And for heaven's sake, wash your hands. Take care and be safe.